Writing is a curious business. What are we doing when we write? We're trying to make visual what is not visual. Talk is auditory. Signals come in your ears. They come from your mouth. They don't come in your eyes. And until very recently in human evolution, there was no writing. Writing wasn't even necessary. If you're living as a hunter-gatherer with a small extended family, then talk is enough. Talk does whatever you require it to do. And since languages of the humankind seem to be a few hundred thousand years old, we might ask why writing happened at all. Why should one want to write? Writing seems to be associated with the development of large cities, as happened in Mesopotamia and in Central America and in China. It's tempting to put it down to the growth of tax departments, but that's probably cynical. So if we are going to write, what should the marks that we make that we can later see represent? The most obvious thing for them to represent are the things that we're talking about, so that a picture of a bird represents a bird. And in the beginning, a number of writing systems had that as their way of doing things. These tend to be ideographic systems, and over time the pictures become more and more stylized until finally you can't come back to the original picture with any degree of certainty. So Chinese characters, for example, were originally pictures, and Egyptian hieroglyphs were originally pictures, but years later, centuries later, the original pictures have become so stylized we can no longer recognize them. You'll notice that there are pluses and minuses to ideographic systems if you think about it for a while. First of all, it doesn't matter which dialect of a language you speak. A picture of a bird is a picture of a bird, and once everybody recognizes that it's a bird, then it doesn't matter how you pronounce the word bird. The disadvantage is that if you need pictures of everything, then pictures of stones and birds and dogs and so on are comparatively easy, but pictures of government, industry, courage, and so on, they're much more difficult pictures to draw. Not only that, if your vocabulary is, say, 5,000 words, then you have 5,000 pictures to learn. That's a lot of learning, a very long time in school. Another way to proceed is to try and represent the sounds that we're producing rather than the morphemes, if you like, that we are talking about. That can be done in a number of ways. The one we're used to is an alphabetic system. Alphabets are really ways of trying to represent the phonemes of the language. Each phoneme is represented by one written symbol. That is, if you have an almost perfect representation, phoneme to character. Now, we know that English isn't like that, but a number of languages get quite close. Another way to represent the sound of a language is to pick only the consonants. In a number of languages, like Hebrew and Arabic, basically what you see on the page are the consonants, and occasionally, if you want to, you can add little squiggles to indicate the vowels. This is because the structure of Hebrew and Arabic is rather different from ours, that is, the syllable structure, and so once you've got three consonants, you can pretty much guess what the vowels are from context. Another way to represent the sounds is to represent each syllable rather than the sounds themselves. You get more syllables, of course, than you get individual phonemes, but languages which have a comparatively simple syllable structure, consisting perhaps only of a consonant and a vowel, might have 50 or 60 syllables, and so they can be represented on the page by syllables alone. And Japanese has a couple of writing systems that enable you to do that. So what we've seen is that writing is quite various. It's comparatively recent, only a few thousand years old, and there are a number of quite different ways of representing talk visually. Talk is just talk, but writing is a visual means of representing talk.